Shanti Khan. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale. Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine. Nirvasesya Sundavari Paskachare Zatarine. Pancha Kapatarubdhascha Kripa Sundhu Vebacha. Padita Nambapa Vevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhareta Jararha Sivasarive Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's come from the Chaitanya Srila Prabhupada ki. Vaishnava Thakur ki. Let's get that little thing on my when you open up the door. As Baba talks about the Gita Nandan prophecy. So, I'd like to thank all the devotees for the nice ceremony yesterday. Actually, I'd like to thank all of you for being who you are. We bring to the environment what we are, what we have. And it's wonderful to constantly have this amazing society Prabhupada has given us, where devotees can literally travel all over the world, and they can come in contact with their spiritual family. Just as we were honoring our, in some cases some of you went home over the holidays, and you're visiting your material family members, friends and other relatives. But of course, after a short time, you realize that your real family is really your spiritual associations, even more so in the sense that we're thinking alike and having similar aspirations. So family means people who you can be at home with, people who you identify with in so many new ways. So ultimately there is, you know, one human family, as we're all part and parcel, as we were saying yesterday, same in quality as Krishna, but different in quantity. But some people are being a little aware of that, and some people are, of course, are trying to find ways to avoid, you know, the obvious. He said it was interesting for the world to have to just really think how temporary, how precarious, how uncertain the material nature is. And also good for devotees to be reminded. And so all the thoughts that we have done during that period are very healthy, and keep them. Keep the thoughts that there's nothing so categorical about material energy. We never give our full trust or attention to it. It's been amazing all around the world how few incidents that have taken place thus far. In a few cases, there was a nuclear disturbance in Japan, but that was rectified seemingly pretty fast. There were some problems in Alaska, but it doesn't seem like something so protracted. A few terrorist threats in a few places. But basically, things went definitely rather smooth. And so you can see that materialists put their money in some environments, they try to make sure that they get some results. Of course, in the next few days, some things, of course, will show, because the major problems are going to be economic problems. That turns into some other problems later, of course, but we said many times, no way you can put billions and billions of dollars in the international arena and not make a big difference.
But that is expected, some gradual types of deterioration. Things we set up in the community or in your homes, we're focusing a little bit more on some self-sufficient orientated things is very good. Storage of food, the pumps, the more consideration about if electricity does go off, if water is not there, what to do. That's good. This is all healthy for being able to have more and more sense of genuine community. And hopefully all of you were constantly thinking about other families, other persons, other devotees. Because that is the nature of a devotee, Param Dukha Dukhi Kripam Moody. It's like these are drills. It's like in California, in places where there have been earthquakes and other parts of the world in the past. I mean, floods and all these things. So sometimes people, they do these drills in some places where there is potential earthquake or volcano eruption. And then one day, they actually have the real thing. And of course, many people, they even know that it's coming and they still die because they're so attached to their home. It's like in Venezuela and a few places where many people die. Some people die because they just refuse to leave their homes. And the reason, and they were right in their thinking in one sense, they are aware that their places will actually get looted. And of course, you know, this does happen and did happen. But they are ready to give sacrifice their lives just for material commodities. And of course, that's unfortunate. So where many of the vaults are, where they are anticipated eruptions to happen based on earthquakes and whatnot, and those things, it's natural to take place in different times. But according to what Krishna wants, determines the gravity or the seriousness of what happens wherever it happens. It's not always easy to understand why so much disaster in so many different places. We were discussing the other day why millions of people were just killed in Argentina and Brazil. Why even here in North America, and as the Europeans settled here in America, the millions of Indians who were just slaughtered, millions of native Brazilians, practically wiped away. Brazil and Argentina, there's practically no trace of the original people. They were just literally just killed by the millions. So history has shown that humanity can be very harsh, very cruel to each other. The million amount of Jews that were killed, Africans that were killed in the passage as well as in slavery. Just millions and millions. Stalin, Hitler, the amount of people, Lenin, the amount of people that they killed, millions, literally. Unbelievable. So people can do crazy things. Ecological changes can cause many problems, etc. But that is where we are. This is what material energy is. So this is why Prabhupada, as he gave his Gita Nagari prophecy, which was not just for Gita Nagari here. We take it very much serious because Prabhupada was talking about communities. And of course he did give some particular focus on Gita Nagari as this physical place. But when he was discussing about the establishment of where the Gita can be practiced and understood, he was having this vision worldwide where different class of people could come together and be able to honor spirituality in a very deep way. So we have a chance to try to honor Prabhupada. He once said about Gandhi, the best way to honor a person is to create a community that represents that person's ideas. And so I want to thank all of you, different communities you're from, those of you here, for the efforts that you're making in trying to create the idea of Gita Nagari, or environments where the sacred Shastra is foremost in our consciousness. And as Prabhupada spoke about, and I have this as you come into my room, as a reminder to myself and to others, but Prabhupada emphasizes about the hospital for the heart. And so Prabhupada explains in this little paragraph, if any treatment has to be done, and Tarka helped to remind me about this some time back. He downloaded it off the computer. If any treatment has to be done for the disease of the human being, it has to be done from the very inception, namely from the internal potency. Such treatment only will make every living being hearty and happy. As such, the Gita Nagari has to minister the treatment of diseased persons both externally and internally. So both things must be there. Some of the things we've been doing are external, and some of it was attacks, some of it was a little headache having to deal with some of these things. And most important is our internal reflections and development. This is practically, there's practically, Prabhupada says, no hospital for the treatment of the internal potency. And Gita Nagari must be very much alive to this point of view. For such internal treatment of the human being, Bhagavad Gita will always help us. This is Gita Nagari, the hospital for the heart. It was so wonderful last night seeing the performance of the children. Because we understand they're not really children, actually, is it? You see they serve and how they speak and how they reflect in many ways. We see that, yes, they're just in little bodies, but quite interesting souls. It was very exciting. Just thinking about the fact that, and accepting now that we are in January 1st, 2000. Sounds like another time zone or something. But we have arrived. And so the question is now, what quality of service do we find ourselves about in contrast to the past? The wonderful opportunity we can have now, particularly in being able to, just like we saw last night, there wasn't so many people here, but still the temple was quite packed. But we want to see Radha Damodar in a much grander facility or larger facility. And so here this building is next to them. It's been empty for so long. Now we can have more of a clear mind about trying to arrange things for them. The girls who went out and the boys who went out to do Sankirtan, so they have helped to facilitate that already. And so the next few weeks we can start getting some focus on some things that we're going to do in that particular effort. And some funds have been, small funds, but something has been made available by the austerity of those devotees. And now we can later have festivals where we can be able to worship them. We can invite so many more people to come. After we do that, then we will see, as we take care of the Lord, the nucleus, how many other things come about. Because we want nice guest facilities. When you come, we pack you in little places, and in time we can be able to do like this. And we not want to think about years ahead of time. We want to talk about it in the next few years. See, often the most difficult thing is getting a foundation. Once the foundation is there, then so many things can unfold. It's like when the devotees, a little bit way back, were thinking again about trying to have some sort of school on the property. And thinking about it, it becomes overwhelming. We think about all the difficulties and so many things. But then we just start what you have, and then gradually things begin to happen. Wasn't that long ago when we came here, and there's only five, six or so active devotees sort of in the project, and so many cows and one cowherd boy who was sort of eccentric in many ways. And nobody knew anything. We still don't know much, but we know a little something. We know some things of what not to do from some trial and error. I thought it was so ecstatic yesterday. It's probably a way of ending the year also. All of the boys who were doing it probably didn't feel that way. And they were in the backyard fixing the pump. And it was such a transcendental experience. There were five or six of the men, and they were dressed in their intense work clothes, with their walkie-talkies. You know, thick, corduroy outfits or whatever. And it was like an army. How they were not exactly knowing what they were doing, but somehow they were doing something. They tried to get the plumber wasn't available, and so they stepped in and just used the skills that they did have. And somehow they were able to accomplish something. And I thought this is good, because we want to learn more and more how to do these things so that we can service each other and not have to depend on situations that sometimes may be available, sometimes not. Because as we start and as we conclude with doing things by the devotees, so much more bhakti is brought to that situation. Not even always just the ultimate outcome, but it's the bhakti that's involved in trying to do. Sometimes you can notice that in different environments, that where there is a sufficient amount of bhakti, then the environment just kind of unfolds, opens up. Or sometimes you see the deity service and you see that whoever the pujaris are, or whoever the pujari is, they're giving such care to the deity. Even though it may be simple dressing, but the bhakti just comes forward. So this is what we're trying to address, how to catch up with that bhakti. So I asked us to very much grab and hold on to the mindset from now until we depart in these bodies, with the say of another year, but that we all focus so much more on understanding the danger and the stagnation of the false ego. That we really work at it, go looking for where the false ego hides, and to uproot it. When there's enemies waiting to attack, then in time they will attack. But if we go for them, we eliminate the attackers. So the idea is not just sitting back waiting to deal with instances and situations and mind problems and other things that they come about, but trying to weed it out from the roots. And so we want you all to really make this one of your most dynamic exercises, and you'll see how when you do read, when you do serve, when you do associate, how much everything will have much more depth for you. Otherwise, we become professional, you know, grihasthas, brahmacharis, sannyasis, etc. So I just want to read this one page here. Not so much of trying to give a lecture or something today, but just to share something. This is by Bhaktisiddhanta, and he is speaking at his Vyas Puja. And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta is not a conditioned soul, not possessor of false ego. But he, as well as other great acharyas, they say and do things for our own benefit. And so reading this can help us also to see how even these great, great personalities, they constantly reflect on what is going on with themselves and the environment. So we ask you, when things are being said or being done, you ask yourself, where is that coming from? is what I'm saying, is it really coming from my genuine concern for the person, for the community? Is it really coming from my real desire to be a devotee? Or is this something I'm saying or something I'm doing? Is it actually coming from my desire for distinction and adoration? Is it coming from my desire wanting people to like me in a certain way? Is it coming from my desire to try to get one over on someone else or whatever? But just to think. It's quite a dynamic exercise to see how many times we are saying or doing something and it's coming from the wrong place. Even though we say the right word or have the right appearance, it's coming from the wrong place. And we ask ourselves this constantly, then we can put it in the right place, get the adjustment. It becomes very sweet. As we're doing things because we're actually genuinely doing them for the Lord and for His servants. And the hypocrisy goes, and the posturing and the artificiality, etc. So I would like to read this, and then I want to give all of you something. Is Jambavan Sambit, are they here? Where's Jambavan? He's on the altar? Okay. Sadachari, is around the corner? Okay. Mangalwati, is she at the leaf? Yeah, no, I'm just wondering where you are. Okay. You're milking, you're coming back? Okay. So, by Bhakti Siddhanta, he is reflecting. Which one, the light on? Just turn it off. Turn the aperture on there. Yeah. He is just looking at the experience of interacting as a guru, receiving worship. Of course, on his Vyas Puja, it's a time of more intense focus like that. And so he is himself, who is a pure servant of Krishna and of his guru, is looking. What is this I'm receiving? What is this that I am doing? Where is it really coming from? Assuming responsibility of being guru, and this is not just for someone who is guru to reflect, but for all of us. And as parents, as teachers, as we do various types of services in various ashrams, a chance for us to look deep. What is going on in my life? What is really happening? How much do I really want to honor what I'm doing? Am I really satisfied and proud about this, or is it a facade? Assuming responsibility of being guru, we have taken upon ourselves the responsibility of welcoming this grave charge. All the audience have accepted ordinary seats. I alone have been provided with a lofty seat. All are being told, in effect, do have a look at a big animal from the zoo gardens. So even when we receive some honoration, some respect for the wonderful things that we have done, the wonderful sankirtan that the devotees do, the nice development of this, arrangement of this, we should be careful how we are accepted on our own account. But we should be in a genuine mood that somehow Krishna has used me, somehow this has happened in spite of my weaknesses or shortcomings. It's like the behind me you see this cake that Mohini and Sambit made. And so it's, it's just so nice how they are doing these creative things. And they are thinking, of course, to do something as an offering to the devotees. Unfortunately, it's not a courtesy cake. Otherwise, by the time you got here, it would have already been gone. So maybe we will save it and give it to the children tomorrow. All are being told, in effect, do have a look at the big animal from the zoo gardens. What arrogance! So foolish, so wicked. Have you ever seen such a big brute? This is what he's reflecting on himself. Garlands of flowers have been put around his neck. What laudations, what bombastic, long-drawn, and hyperbolic adjectives. And how complacently, too, he is listening to the praise of his own achievements. Well, the materialist or the mixed devotee is always thinking, when is someone going to glorify me, pat me on the back? When is someone going to notice me, you see? But as we realize, divine couple are always noticing. And that we're thinking to be unqualified. Is he not acting in plain violation of the teachings of Mahaprabhu? Can such a big brute, so selfish and insolent, be ever reclaimed from his brutishness? I happen to be one of the greatest of fools. So the next time somebody gives us some respect or some honor, or next time we feel an anxiety that somebody didn't or notice us or respect us, you have to think about that. You have to ask yourself, where is that? Where is that coming from? Is that my soul crying out, speaking out? No. No one offers me good advice on account of my arrogance. Inasmuch as nobody condescends to instruct me, I place my case before Mahaprabhu himself. So even the highest level of servants of Krishna, they never see themselves as independent. They're even more wanting to be connected, to be blessed, to be guided, to be under, of course, Krishna and his servants' care. The thought occurred to me, but the materialistic-minded person is always trying to break away from and do their own thing as much as possible. The thought occurred to me that I would make over the charge of myself to him and see what he would advise me to do. Then Sri Chaitanya Deva said to me, "Whomsoever thou meetest, instruct him regarding Krishna. By my command, being guru, deliver this land." So we can feel, you know, incompetent to do so many different services, so many different things. But we feel, yes, how can we do this? But at the same time, we understand, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's command, how can we not do it? How can we not do something grand to glorify the Lord if we do it by Mahaprabhu's command? Some of the things you're doing now, you did not think you could do it a year ago, 2 years ago, even 6 months ago. But if somehow we humble ourselves to do, then it can be done. If Krishna wants it, it will happen. And if he doesn't, then it can do all kinds of things, and it just will not happen. By my command, being guru, deliver this land. If this thou wilt not be instructed by the current of the world, thou will have my company once again at this place. In this verse it is to be found the proper explanation of the apparent inconsistency noticed above. He whose only teaching is humility, greater than that of a blade of grass, said, "By my command." In other words, he's saying, Lord Chaitanya's teaching is just humility. And he is ordering, be guru, go out, preach, save the land. And he's ordering this to everyone. Not someone who's just formally giving diksha or shiksha. He's ordering everyone, be guru, go out and make a difference. Go out and save the land. Everyone, pitavitiya chayata nugarigram. Everyone, go out and see that the message is spread to every town, and literally to every village. So on our own, yes, what can we do? But he who is the most humble is giving this order that may seem to be of arrogance. Do this, make it happen. but by his command. It is our duty to carry it out. My command, be guru, save this land. And in instance, Mahaprabhu himself has given the commandment. His commandment being, perform the duty of guru even as I do it myself. Also, convey this command to whomsoever you chance to meet. So you have to watch that one a little bit closer. Some of you who are working in secular jobs and other things are not always in association with Vaishnavas. That you have a duty to share something of what you know, or to try to create an environment where you can connect with people so that somehow you are spiritualizing your environment, you are protecting yourself, and at the same time, you're trying to help others to know something and not just hold it for ourselves. It is not kind to have something and not to somehow try to share it or distribute it. Now, whosoever happens to hear these words would naturally protest with palms joined. But I am really a great sinner. Somebody may think, but I'm not a preacher, or I'm not intelligent, or I don't understand the books, or I got too many children, or I don't have a husband, or I don't have a wife, or I don't have this, I don't have good health, so many things. But we find ways how to preach, to share what we are acquiring. To this Mahaprabhu replies, is this thou will not be obstructed by the current of the world? Thou will have my company once again at this place. Do not practice the craft of a guru for the purpose of injuring others through malice. Do not adopt the trade of a guru in order to get immersed in the slog of this world. But if you can indeed, meaning do not take the position of arrogance as a devotee, not be condescending, nor be in avoidance to deliver the message, to share the message. I have no fear, but if you can indeed do not adopt the trade of a guru in order to get immersed in the slough of this world, but if you can indeed be my guideless servant, you'll be endowed with my power, then you need not fear. I have no fear. My Gurudev has heard this from his Gurudev. So we have no fear because this goes back to Krishna himself passing it down. And so we understand. Krishna controlling all things. What is there to fear other than to connect? It is for this reason that my Gurudev has accepted even such a great sinner as myself. He has told me, by my command, being guru, save this land. It is only those who have never heard these words of Gaurasundara who say, how odd. I disobeyed the law, which has come down to me through the pain of preceptorial succession, the offense due to omission to carry out the guru's order. Guru will sever me from the lotus feet of Gurudev. If in order to carry out, and his body's not to express this little intention, if in order to carry out the command of the Vaishnava Guru, I have to be arrogant, to be brutish, to suffer eternal perdition, I am prepared to welcome such eternal damnation and even sign a pact to that effect. So on one's own account, one does not doesn't try to do things based on the ego or one's own intelligence or strength. But on the order of Shastra and Guru, then even things that seem totally, totally beyond one's ability, one is ready to do. I will not listen to the words of other malicious persons in lieu of the command of the Gurudev. I will dissipate with indomitable courage and conviction the currents of thought of all the rest of the world. Relying on the strength deprived from the lotus feet of Gurudev, I confess to this arrogance. By sprinkling a practice of the pollen of the lotus feet of my preceptor, chores of people like you will be saved. There is no such learning in this world, no such sound reasoning in all the 14 worlds, and no man gods that can weigh more than a solitary particle of the dust of the lotus feet of my Gurudev. So we see the best servants, the best instructors are those who are the best servants. The best teacher is those who is the best disciple. So here he's saying, looking at this whole process, or is the last line, you know, there's no such learning in this world, no such sound reasoning in all the 14 worlds, and no man god that can weigh more than the solitary particle, the dust, lotus feet of my Gurudev. Gurudev, in whom I have an illicit trust, can never spite me. I am by no means prepared to listen to the words of anyone who wants to hurt me or to accept such a malicious person as my preceptor. This is called assuming responsibility of preaching or of guru. So he's analyzing, what is this? Why am I taking this position of receiving distinction, adoration? Why this? Why am I taking this position of service? But then he realizes that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself has said to do such. And so not on his own account, but on account of service to the Lord, service to sadhus, then he is prepared to do the necessary. So in conclusion is, we are asking all of us, and I will do it even more with you for my own self-purification, is that we constantly look to weed out the false ego. That we constantly examine to see what things are there coming from the wrong place rather than coming genuinely for service, selfless service. What things that we do where we are egocentrically focused rather than really being sufficiently theocentric, where we're not really being daso smi, or servant of the servant. And we can be shocked to see how we may do most things that we do to be based on the me rather than the idea of para dukkha dukkhi kripa and buddhi, of feeling the happiness, the misery, the concern of others. So I wanted to take a few minutes, see if you have a few questions, and then I'd like to give you all, every one of you, a souvenir to help to act as a catalyst to stimulate you throughout the year about investigating or looking for the ego as it is hiding, to search it out. So I'm going to give each of you some type of souvenir, token gift, as a reminder that as you use it, see it, have it in your house, that you reflect on, yes, we understand that of all the elements that's imprisoning the living entity in the material world, each one is 10 times thicker than the other, with mind, intelligence, but the thickest is the false ego. So we can follow the rules and regulations and not eliminate false ego, and we will remain lifetime after lifetime still in the physical body. No question of not following those, but following those gives us the foundation, not the goal. We follow in the wrong consciousness, we will wonder why our material desires are as strong or stronger than our spiritual desires. We'll wonder why our weeds keep popping up, why the aparats somehow come back to haunt us. And so it's a matter of the conscious shift that happens as we stimulate the divine ego and eliminate the false ego. So in the last few weeks I've been doing some sharing, as we did last night, on some specific things about the false ego. So most of you were there, just reflect on that. But take it as a theme as we enter into now this new dispensation, that we want to make Krishna consciousness work more for ourselves and for our environments. We want to stop creating such an embarrassment. Internationally, our movement is somewhat of an embarrassment to the degree that it is not working for most of the people. And therefore, there is too many fall downs, too many harsh dealings, too many deviations, too much ego, too much sectarianism, too much posturing. And so that sweetness of devotional service that we are hungry for will not come out until we can remove more and more some of the obstacles. So Prabhupada discussing about the Gita Nagari as the hospital for the heart, the way to remind all communities that it's really about, it's about the heart. And if the heart isn't in the right place, then we can make many arrangements and they're going to end in a certain amount of frustration. I know I decided a few years ago, I don't want to be any place where people are not trying to love each other. It just doesn't make any sense to come to spiritual life to have so much of the patterns of material energy. And the way we do that is that one doesn't wait to be loved, one doesn't wait for others to respond, one doesn't wait for other groups or things to happen, one lives that way themselves. And therefore, you demand it from others.
So my secretary's getting some, Miss Angie, some of my letters. Sometimes they're shocked to see somebody writes me about this problem, that problem, this thing, that thing, or whatever. And I always try to address it from a love perspective because I don't want to be involved in opening up channels for Maya to beat you. The more we get distracted from the real track of this, what this Raja Vidya is. Not a matter of denial, because as Vaishnavas, we're spiritual scientists, so we must look, and we must analyze and evaluate. And we must lovingly call a spade a spade. Honest communication means you honestly care. You're communicating because you want, what you want people to say or think of you, then that's not genuine communication. Or you're communicating based on your idea of arrogance, but we do have perception as individuals, and we do have concerns, and it's our duty to address and to speak on those with boldness but humility. The audience we were discussing is to be humble, submissive, and bold. Boldness means that you let Krishna do the work. Humble means you open up and let it happen. Submissive means that you're attentive to the importance of it happening. Otherwise, it becomes impersonal. Not a matter of being in denial, or is it a matter of just being arrogant or bold without humility and without submissiveness? And when you see any sadhu who doesn't have both qualities is not a true sadhu. Because a sadhu represents Krishna. Krishna does two things always. He annihilates the demons or clarifies what is demonic. And at the same time, he is mainly there for the loving exchanges. Somebody's just finding the issues or discrepancies. What kind of sadhu is that? Somebody's just talking about the wonderful exchanges of Vrindavan, of the spiritual kingdom, of Ras Tattva, the wonderful exchanges of Vaishnava Association, and is not analyzing the field of activity and dealing with that, is not a proper sadhu. So our duty is to do as Krishna has requested. This is our examples. In the great acharyas, they are manifestations of Krishna's loving potency and also his potency of clarification. And so if someone is in fact a sadhu, they make you feel encouraged. If you are doing the right thing, if you're doing the right wrong thing, they make you feel embarrassed. If you are doing improper and they don't make you feel embarrassed, they have no damn potency. Excuse the expression. Prabhupada, we see that he was gentle like a child. At the same time, he was concerned and even more gentle and compassionate like a lion. His concern and his strength was based on not wanting to see people be abused, misused, and to see deviation become dominant. And that is love. As you love your children, you don't want to see anything happen to them. It's your duty to be there for them. And sometimes it means that you scold them because you're concerned about what could happen. So you want to avoid negative things coming their way. And you embrace and encourage them because you are happy about what they are doing and you want to reinforce that. So I want to encourage you all that as we reflect now on this the idea that we're moving into a new era, a new dispensation, we make it really a new time in our life to intensify our commitments, and that we really try to become more focused on the deities. Whatever we do in this community or any of our communities, we try to focus more that here's a chance to make a certain type of offering for their lordships. We want to offer them quality. The environment becomes more and more the idea that this is the environment for the divine couple, and we have a wonderful chance to serve them in such ways. So maybe there's any short questions that anyone has. They'd like to give everyone a little souvenir to for you to have as acting as a catalyst to remind you to go looking, to weed out the false ego, and to allow the pure ego to flourish. Anyone have any comment or any question? Yanagri, the hospital for the heart. Very poetic the way Prabhupada explains that. We know that even from the physical body, how valuable the heart organ is. When it's having some trouble, the whole body is in trouble. Anyone? I have to throw this away. This is dangerous. So we find ourselves in connection with poison. We see the false ego surfacing like this. We have to see it as like poison, that it can literally be suicidal to our spiritual existence. You have a question? Mm-hmm. Oh, to the microphone. Echo here. Bring this back to the place around. Yes.
Recently, I was reading in a Krishna book and also in the Radha Krishna Nectar book about the different demons that Krishna slayed. When we recognize the qualities that the demons in our consciousness displayed, should we continue to do inventory and speak with you about this, as we're noticing in our false ego how, as Krishna used the examples when he slayed the different types of demons, how we can purge our false egos of these demoniac qualities?
Well, it's just like the idea of Param Dhistha Navartate, we replace the lower, something higher. We just try to go for every aparad, every offense, every bad thought, try to catch it, and we give so much energy of fuel to it, unnecessarily in that way, because we spend our whole day just dealing with so many negative things. Definitely have to look and search out, but most of our energy has to be on trying to put time, focus, energy into those higher things while we are watching to see what may be catching with us. So we're accelerating, and then we're watching to make sure that the negative things are not catching up on us. So we are searching out in that way, but our main focus is keep running. This is why we see the nectar devotion we have. You know, the 64 things to do, and we have also the offenses to be avoided. If we do things and we don't avoid defenses, then we won't get the results. But we just study defenses, and if we don't know what to do, we'll just get bogged down and bored. It'll be just like rules and regulations, that's all. Prabhupada sometimes told us, and he told us that when we were in the university preaching, do not preach to the college students, and we can take this in general preaching, tell us, do not preach the Krishna consciousness, just rules and regulations. Who just wants to hear, don't do this and don't do that. Don't eat meat, don't take intoxication, no gambling, no this and sex, no caffeine. you know, no frivolous voice. Notice, I mean, people think. But if they understand something that's higher on higher reasons, then it's not such a problem. So, any other question? Yes, appreciate
it. Gurudev, in your series on Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti, the Bhakti Yoga trilogy,
yes.
You mentioned the discussion of the different advances that the devotee can make, gradual build up to purity, and he was discussing particularly the anathas. There was one which you said, he mentioned in the book, that a devotee may get to the stage where they know what is right spiritually, but they do the wrong thing anyway.
Yeah.
What advice or main point can you give to, you know, to remedy such situation?
Well, you see that on the part of millions of people. There are millions of friends of the karmis, but millions of karmis who know that smoking is bad, but they still smoke. So the question is, why do they do that? They know it's bad, but their determination to stop it is not sufficiently strong enough. We can take, there are some who do not know it's bad. Some people are not educated to even know that cigarettes is really bad for them. And so they do it because they're in ignorance. And the others who, you know, maybe they heard some rumor, what they consider the rumor, but they're not sure. But there are those who distinctly know, but they don't have the strength, determination, proper association or whatever, to stop. And there are those who know it's bad, who were smoking, but now they've stopped smoking. So, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti, we don't have time to go into so much depth, but he explains different categorizations of some of those things that cause the weakening of the bhakti creeper. Anyone
else?
Yes.
If someone needs help spiritually and they're reluctant to ask for help when they're trying to deal with things on their own, could that be a sign that the fallen ego is at work?
The sign of ego. If somebody is having spiritual difficulty and they feel too embarrassed or too shy to ask for help, it's another sign of ego. Because what they're really saying is, I don't want people to know that I'm not as wonderful as they may think that I am. I don't want people to know that I don't really have it together as I may seem to. I don't want people to realize how much I'm in need. But we want to recognize that we all have so many needs, and we all are so much social beings. This is why Sadhu Sangha is so essential. And the persons who advance the fastest are those who are even more aware of their needs, and they're constantly trying to see how to address them. Even to the point that the more we advance, the more we start seeing how much stuff that we have to deal with, and then one keeps on moving and moving. Like a person has a little knowledge, sometimes they feel quite comfortable because they have a little knowledge. Then once they start learning more and more, they realize how little they actually know. So it's a natural part of the growth process that, as we unfold, we start seeing so many things that are still hanging around that we have to deal with. That's Krishna's mercy. Because it's Krishna saying, oh, you're doing that one okay, come a little faster, then take this and do this and do this, and remove this and remove that. You got a question?
So where do we find the balance then between being potent enough that if someone is doing wrong, that, you know, we do make them feel embarrassed, but at the same time not feeling so embarrassed that, you know, we just completely push them away and make it impossible for them to come back or to try to alleviate whatever the situation is.
Well, the difference between making someone feel embarrassed because you love them and care for them and you know that they can do better and you're expecting better and you're encouraging better, the difference between the child who feels, oh, mommy, daddy, Peter, Martha, they love me so much and they are expecting, they trust me so much, therefore I feel embarrassed that I'm not coming up to the standard. From just the point of telling the child, you imbecile, you moron, you're never going to be any good, you're just so embarrassing to me as to have you as a child, then you really have reinforced his feeling of feeling low achievement mentality. Or it can be adult to adult, it can be condescending rather than a real sense of helping. No, we can help the person by letting them see we are on the same team. We are on Mahaprabhu's mission. And please, you are not covering your side. Is there something I can do to help? Please take notice of this situation. This is so unhealthy for what it's doing to you. You are smoking, you are drinking, you're this, you're that. So we help the person to feel a wake-up call in that sense of embarrassment, not in the sense of just going fault, looking for the faults. The difference between going to look for the fault, fault-finding, and going love-finding. In both cases, it's activity and it's acceleration. But the love-finding means you're going to look and analyze and evaluate what you're going to see. What is the love element that you can bring to the situation? Yes. You saw that question.
I'm always actually in awe that when I finally decide to go on a mission of self-analysis and self-purification, I start digging up a lot of stuff and start thinking about it, and whatever it takes me a couple of months to finally understand, you clarify like 2 days, two lectures, and you've hit everything on the every nail on the head that I was finally thinking about, so thank you. A lot of times, I'm speaking for myself, I find that there's a lot of things that I want to do for Krishna, I want to do for myself, and they simply remain as thoughts. And I was thinking this year, since it's the new millennium and we don't go through a new millennium every year, that to make the effort to really be all that I can be, to use every talent that Krishna has given me in his service. And I know we all have different talents and different abilities that Krishna has given every single one as a special gift. Some may know what they are, some may not know what they are, but to try to understand what that talent is that Krishna has given us, to be able to give back to him in service. And while I was thinking like this, the first thought that came up to my mind was the false ego, just as you've been talking about it. And now it's beginning a struggle in my mind as to, on one hand, trying to put everything aside to really try to make whatever it is that you want to do happen for Krishna, at the same time to guard against the danger of just doing it for self-gratification or self-aggrandizement. And I know that one of the safety catches, or one of the safety nets to stop that happening is humility, as you've spoken on. So for those like myself that don't have any humility, how do you be all that you can be for Krishna without it degenerating into a power play or an ego trip?
Sometimes we have difficulty with humility because we lack sufficient gratitude. Sometimes we have difficulty with humility because we lack sufficient appreciation of others. And so therefore, too much is focusing on our idea, our plan. So if we're having trouble with humility, we have to first begin to appreciate others' existence so much more. And we naturally become more humbled, and we're able to honor another's existence, and it automatically makes us more humble. So if someone is having that experience, then they have to look a little closer at what is causing them not to be able to appreciate others. Even somebody who has a lot of bad qualities, still, you look close, you'll find they have so many good qualities and so many reasons to appreciate the things, you know, that they do do. If we're honest, if we're looking at ourselves, we see that we're not, you know, necessarily, you know, God's gift, you know, to the world. And so we don't have to so much fake it, but we have to be more honest and see, well, we do have so many reasons, you know, to be humbled.
Thank you for the wonderful class, Gurudev. As a devotee matures, we understand that, you know, first-class disciple is someone who knows the mind of, or has a sense of the mood of the spiritual master, and with that mature understanding, he or she can encounter so many situations and properly represent and carry that mood into that situation. But then at the same time, as a disciple or devotee matures, he becomes increasingly inquisitive to want to inquire from the spiritual master. So could you comment on seemingly the incompatibility between the two?
It's the same thing. We inquire. We inquire to get more clarity on what to do and how to do it, and then we use that as a catalyst to try to honor our spiritual independence to be able to try to do the necessary things. We inquire to get some clues. Everyone should make some inquiry from their spiritual masters, or spiritual master's already gone, left the planet, and we remember things he said, things he did, instructions he's given. In Prabhupada's case, his books, they're eternally there for us. And so now we can't inquire from him directly, physically, but when he was on the planet, then some inquiries can be there. If we look at all the, you know, all the letters in the letter books, and some of the conversation tapes, and also the books, we see that there was this constant inquiring that was going on. One just thinks, well, I know the mind of my guru, then that's dangerous. But one is not inquiring when there's opportunity, then we'll feel very sad. It's like many of us, we feel very sad that we didn't inquire more from Srila Prabhupada. If you talk to many of the senior devotees, they'll think, I should have asked Prabhupada this, or I should have done this and that. And that's typical, even in a secular situation. After someone leaves, people think, oh, we should have did this together, why I didn't apologize, why I didn't show my love more. That's there. So inquiry is there. But not that one only is just inquiring to do like a blind follower. We inquire to get some clue, some idea, some basic framework of understanding. And then the guru is happy as one pursues spiritual independence based on grabbing the essence of something and then moving with that. You know, spiritual master who just wants followers, then something's wrong there. But any teacher is happy when the teacher is made teachers. Or the student takes initiative in such ways. Yes, Antarami?
Being here because she could have been anywhere else but the United States. We are so grateful because I know among everybody I've got to be the most imperfect, fallen, non-deserving.
I was thinking to save myself. I'm going to be someplace. If I leave my body, I'll be happy to leave my body. He says, oh, Guru Dave, let's go and camp for Guru Dave.
But this false ego, this arrogance, this impersonalism goes hand in hand, and it's very difficult, depending on where you are. You're right in the midst sometimes, depending on where you're working, where you associate. You're in the midst of Maya. When you're taking the Krishna conscious route, you're going to stand out in the first place. You're just going to stand out. And 9 times out of 10, people know you're doing the right thing. You know you're doing the right thing, so they kind of push you up and push you out there. And yes, you do get a little arrogant. You get a little cocky, but then you're kind of pushed in that position, and you know no matter what you do, you realize you're doing the right thing. So it's almost like it's pushed upon you. You don't have to take it, but you're kind of set aside from the crowd. So how do you handle that without letting it go to your head? And, yes, it happens. It does.
Well, just by looking in a realistic way, you should know that if it goes to your head, Maya is going to beat you in the head. So we should realize that there's consequence when the ego gets too inflated. Krishna has the most amazing ways of helping us, that if we don't hear the signal sufficiently, then he pulls the rug from under us. And so we can learn that way, but it's a little harsh when it happens that way. You know, many people have things changed in their lives because they're trying to be serious devotees, but they're being a little stubborn. So Krishna will change things so that they get really humbled. You see? Don't worry, Krishna will arrange that. We have to be careful about that one. Yes. So better that we receive Krishna's blessings from, you know, honoring what he's given us and not have some sincerity, but where we're holding on to so many negative things that Krishna shakes us away from those things in a, you know, an abrupt way. It can be overwhelming, and that happens in some cases. If our sukriti or association isn't strong enough, then we can even lose faith in the process. And that can happen in different cases. Okay, maybe take one last question. Anyone else? Yeah, Vasudev. See, the process works. Either it works slow, or it works gradual, or it works fast. We, if choose not to work with it, then it will put us to the sidelines for a while, later in this life or to another lifetime. It's like right now, there's certain devotees who are becoming quite Krishna conscious who have been into heavy maya. Just imagine, say someone joined the movement in the 70s. They served for 10, 15 years, went off into heavy maya. And then one day they found out they got cancer. They have a brain tumor. So what are they going to start thinking about? Huh? Start really realizing this material energy is really hellish. And now I got to check out of here. What am I? What is life really about? And so there have been cases in the last couple of years where people have made a total turnabout. Because when the seeds of devotion is there, it stays with us. Especially when we find ourselves in very, very obviously obvious situations where now our material life is over. And so some people will come back, you know, like that also. They'll have to deal with the hard realities. If they tried this, they tried that, so many different things. But it ended now in chronic disease or death or old age. Yes.
I just wanted to, I guess with Antaryami, agree with saying on behalf of all the residents of Gitanagari how much we thank you for coming here and being here with us for the millennium. But my question is on the topic you're speaking with Bhakti Siddhanta and gurus. And you're explaining that Bhakti Siddhanta says that everyone should become a guru. And I traditionally in Vedic culture, most gurus only accepted small amounts of disciples, very few disciples. But we see Srila Prabhupada changed that in some ways, and now gurus have many, many disciples. So I'm wondering, what effect does it have on the guru when he has the responsibility of having to care for many unqualified disciples?
In our line, we see that there are some of the acharyas who had thousands, some had hundreds, some had only a handful, some had, you know, like, who was it, the guru who was in charge of Manipur, okay, the whole, you know, state of Manipur. Who was it? But it's, no, not ISKCON devotee, but in our line, earlier line. I can't think of the name right now. But anyway, I think Bhakti Siddhanta had about 3,000 or 4,000 disciples. We're calling now Prabhupada about 5,000 or 6,000. Yes, there were. It's not that, historically speaking, gurus had a small number. Sometimes the mouth would be small, sometimes it would be you know, hundreds of tens of thousands. But according to, you know, the adhikari of the personality, in general, in Kali Yuga, it is recommended that one should not take many disciples. That is a general rule in Kali Yuga. And at the same time, we see that the instruction is that without making a disciple, this succession is not going. Prabhupada himself gives both. He gives, explains also that in Kali Yuga, one should not make many disciples. It is dangerous. At the same time, he explains that it is necessary. So, these two things may seem contradictory, but no. It means that, yes, one should be very careful in Kali Yuga. It is very dangerous in that sense. At the same time, on Krishna's order, it can be done. And if it is not done proper, then one gets electrocuted. And so in one sense, guruship is very dangerous. It's like almost like a do or die. Because if there's too much of the hankara, as we're discussing, we'll put it in those terms, then so much of what you are receiving, it gets stuck with you. Then you have to deal with the consequences of that. If you are thinking that you are the gift for everyone, and you are thinking how wonderful you are, you're thinking, I have so many disciples, and I have so much this and so much that, then that is okay. You can think that way, and Krishna will say, okay. So you accept that. Now you accept what comes along with that as well. In general, one has to experience some of the certain reactions based on the weakness or sins of the disciples. That's the general background. But, and that is there, and Krishna holds everyone accountable. He holds the guru accountable, disciple accountable. But also, the Krishna variable is there, that if one had to receive everything based on the deviation of the disciples, the person will become a germ, almost. But a certain amount will be there, according to how much you're letting Krishna be the controller, or how much you're doing it for your guru. If you're not doing it for guru, then to that degree, some of the weight that comes along with that, you're more held accountable for it. So you can see that it's a very beautiful and a powerful system in one sense, because if somebody is doing it improper, then the weight heavies them out, which also becomes a way for that person in the community to realize that there's something wrong. At the same time, one must be careful, because there is reciprocation that goes on between the disciple and the guru in the internal scheme. And so the disciples, for instance, give the guru strength when there is love and there is devotion. And when not, then it has the opposite effect. It's just like right now, so many of us with the flu and the kids, their immune system, so they have it more. But it's in the atmosphere or the virus. So according to your immune system, you get influenced along with the degree of the strength of the virus or the environment. So each spiritual master, in the past as well as the present as well as in the future, has a certain spiritual strength that he or she brings or has and is imbibed with, along with the environment. So with that, then now that is matched with one's with one is carrying. So if one's strength is not so strong, then the deviant disciples will have even a greater effect. If the strength is a little strong, an effect, but not as much. But in general, in Kali Yuga, we are just, you know, babies, you know, trying to be gurus. So we have to be very careful in that sense. But if there's not more and more of a turning it over to Krishna, then more weight, it becomes a problem like that. And that's why you see also that most of us of gurus, we are, you know, quite chronically ill. And it has something to do also with some of the weight, as well as the schedule, the way that the average GBC man works. Because basically, even the multinationals, they have usually, you know, weekends off or vacations. But you analyze the way that the average leader works, that every day one is sort of on call or available. And this is why stress factor is very intense. That many of the devotees' illness has a whole lot to do with, you know, with stress, along with, you know, the immune system and other things. So look at it from a positive side of how, what's the spiritual mentor gets empowered by the love, the dedication, the devotion, the cooperation in the Vaishnava, the Parampara, how much now that authority gets benefited, you know, by such. And it's always easy to analyze these things. We take the model, you know, of a family. I mean, how depressing it is for a mother or father when they know that their son, you know, is actually a debauchee. The son is out there drinking, is gambling. Is, I mean, how depressing. Or to save even his son in the house. And at the same time, how happy they feel when they see, oh, my son just graduated, you know, cum laude. My daughter, she's like this, doing this, like this, you know. Then, I mean, how wonderful it is. It gives the person strength in such ways. So if you take the position of spiritual master, it's also just like a parent. And you can understand the support that's there, as well as the difficulties. Now, when you see that, you know, your beloved is painting, you know, it hurts you. You see your husband, your wife, or your son or daughter, they're depressed, or they're in anxiety, or they're sick. So it affects you in different ways. So now, think about that situation and multiply it 100 times, or multiply it where you have, you know, 1,000 times. And you see the beauty that's there when there is the kind of teamship and support and love and devotion. Then you see the opposite of that. You see. So this is what the Tiny Mahaprabhu was asking everyone to become guru and save the land. We also see how each of us have a tremendous responsibility and role that we play in what constitutes the Krishna conscious experience. You see. And on that note, that's why we're looking at the whole idea of the false ego, trying to see why is it that so many devotees engage in devotional service and somehow become stagnant? Or why is it that so many times we follow the externals for so long, we have so many obnoxious things in our character? Or why is it so much faithlessness or deviation? Why are we such a society that most of our families have been divorced? Or why we have a society where children have been, you know, have been abused? Why we have these things as settings? We look close and we see that it has nothing to do with the devotional process. It's stuff that we've carried in, stuff we've held on to, we haven't become freed of because we haven't gone deep enough in the cleansing process in such ways. So I had no idea who's going to be here, no idea what I'm going to give each person, but what I'd like to do is just start from this side so that I won't miss anyone. And this has been very selfish. People give me so many things, and they pile up every few months, and I always find ways to give it back. So hopefully I won't be giving you the same thing that you gave me. Or if you see something you gave me and it goes out to someone else, just try to understand it. Someone says, oh, I gave that to him 3 weeks ago. Why didn't we give it to someone else? Or maybe I start off in a very simple way. So, in one sense, this has been very selfish. The new year, so I'm cleaning out my closets there. Not that I'm charitable. I'd be thinking of you, but I'm thinking how to clear house a little bit. But as I said, the idea, if we want to process dealing with ego. So one of the first ways that we deal with ego is we look at how we go looking for it, and it's hiding. So we want to pull it out. So first thing I want to give is a few special boxes. These boxes can be, when we find the ego, we throw it into the box, close it up. But before that, I want to give I have my godbrothers here and my godsister. If you get something special.
So, Tucker first, and then Timothy. This is Tucker.
Very static picture of a sheet of PowerPoint. There's no. There's no greater way to develop our divine ego than at the lotus feet of our spiritual master. And Prema also a picture of Srimati Radharani and Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. Where is she? My God's sister. Here's a piece of Dodi from Srila Prabhupada. Maybe I'll take out two managers first. Kunti Madhavacharya, managing the institute for so long. Kunti. There's a book of Bhagavatam stories that are to read to the children. And for Ekavir and Rajalila. Their house has become the what's called like the safe house, the place where devotees go and hide, and they have a chance to chill out. So it's like the mystical house. So we're giving them a set of chimes so that they can put outside the house. So when you approach the house, you hear the chimes. You realize, you know, this is the right place. is Mangal Arati back yet? Okay. I have so many different little things here. Let's see. Like the pack rack, the way I collect. So we can start from our men over here. So, you know how big the ego is, we'll give you a big box, huh? No, I'm just joking. They call the bag lady, I'm the box man. Your box for your false ego? Advaita? No, the size doesn't mean anything now. I'm just joking. I'm just joking on that. I'm looking, how big a box, little box? More than enough to go around, don't worry. A lot more space in my closet in there. look at the categories. The cake we wanted, they wanted to give to the children first. I was going to cut the cake there for them, but it's actually not a cottage cake, so we'll just save it for them tomorrow, I think. Can I give you one to give to her? You can just show them what it is. When we see you, we see Swagger, so you can give to her. A special box for our deities. I don't. You got a very unusual little box there. See how it opens up? What did I mean? It doesn't mean your ego is that small, but you open up. Kolovecha? By Sankirtan, man, your box is like a Lakshmi box. Madhurita?
Your box is a pouch.
Chain, keychain. I can organize this. Okay. Now here are reminders of the electricity that didn't go off. So we'll keep these special lights to revitalize the real ego. Put out the false ego. So, Jayade, this is your light. That's it. How does it work here? So, you continue to be the flame for the Brahmacharis. Pusha Sukta. There's some special illuminating global candles that glow in the dark. Alex Pritchett. Vrindavan. So, very special candles. Remember, we entered into the new millennium, the lights didn't go off, but we want our spiritual light to shine more. Antarami-san? Some candle? Ramaharta? Putting out the fire for the deities? Keep the light for the deities? Regulate it? Yes. Ajimil, did I give you? Okay, let me come around. Okay, we'll get everyone in a second. To the miss on this side. Prema? Did you get a can? To hold these candles, you know, we're not completely over the Y2K yet. When Monday rolls around, we'll see if everything is still in place. Not for lights, there shouldn't be any problem. The next storm we get, it may be an issue then. Derek? Okay, Dadarani? Another way of dealing with the false ego is you start being keeping diary. You write down various expressions so that you can watch your consciousness. Is it Kumari? Kumara? Is it Adrenaline? Nandarupa, the Jagannath Dasi. A special diary with a lock. It's a very lovely journal with nice scenic view. That's great. Another Rami's daughter. Initially.